Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC. Today is Friday, November 26, 2010, which is also Buy Nothing Day and Fur Free Friday. I'm Carissa Thorpe, and I'm joined today by co-hosts Joanne Chang and Hello. Allison Cole. And soon we'll have Amanda, who's just running a little bit late. We also have Adrian Nelson in studio with us today. Welcome, Adrian.
Hi.
He will be talking with us later in the show about Fur Bearer Defenders' new campaign to draw attention to the use of cat and dog fur in fashion in Canada. And also on the show today, we have Lindsay O'Donnell and Julie Sabo of Wake Project, an initiative set out to educate the public about sharks, rays, and tunas. All right. So, did you guys hear about the Matt and Nat controversy?
I certainly did. Tell us about it, Chris.
Well, there is a carnivore who was working for Matt and Nat in Montreal, which is, of course, the vegan purse company. And apparently they only have about 18 employees, but this woman got hired, and she's chosen to remain anonymous, and she's only gone to the media with her complaints. And she's saying that her rights as a carnivore were violated because she wasn't allowed to eat meat at work. But she knew when she was hired that there was a no meat policy, both in the office as well as when you're representing the company at business luncheons. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, first of all, why does she think she has a right to eat meat, you know, especially in a workplace where you know that that's against the ethics and the philosophy of the job? Like, she knew what she was getting into, right?
So yeah, they must have really good perks if she decided that she needed to work at a vegan company as a carnivore.
I know, you could work anywhere, right?
She said that she... Why did she make the choice to work there?
Yeah, she said...
By the way, she's not a carnivore.
She's an omnivore, probably. Well, unless she only eats meat.
Right.
That's what she called herself.
Companies have policies, right? Like, at my work, you can't drink. So can I say... Yeah. Can I say, well, you know, I can't go 8 hours without drinking. I'm going to sneak in my alcohol. So that's
she apparently can't go 8 hours without eating a piece of meat.
Yeah, so. She was kind of almost bragging in the article that I read that she would sneak meat in all the time in her purse so that no one would, I don't know, judge her for her meat eating.
Well, it's against policy, right? She might get fired if she was found eating meat, right? It's against work policy.
Yeah.
Right. And you can't wear, like, hot shorts to work either, right? And you can get fired for that.
Depends what job you have.
But
then again, it depends what job you have. You can eat meat at most jobs. It just happens to be at this one. That's the policy. And they're a vegan company. That's their ethics, right?
Yeah.
It wouldn't make sense for them to be, you know, just displaying the ethics of veganism and totally being cruelty-free, and then people in the office are eating bologna slices or whatever.
I worked at Sweet Cherubim, and they had a policy where you weren't allowed to have meat because it's a vegetarian restaurant.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, people just dealt with it, you know? So I didn't get a chance to make it out to the Earthlings and Lolita double screening last week, but how did it go, Joanne?
The screening was great. There wasn't a huge crowd. I mean, there was about 25 to 30 people. But from the people that we've heard back from, it's had Earthlings especially has a very powerful effect on people. I've heard from people who were thinking of going to eat humane, starting to eat humane meat, and after the film said, you know, I'm going to go vegan. So, and then Lolita, of course, because, you know, the Vancouver Aquarium here does a lot of propaganda, and people that go to see that, you know, suddenly realize, hey, maybe I don't want to go to the Vancouver Aquarium, and we have heard from people who said that they're not taking their kids there anymore.
That's good, because I know a couple of vegans who go to the aquarium, and I don't quite get it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Maybe they needed to see that film.
Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly.
Maybe I should send it to them. And how was the Night for the Oceans for Greenpeace? Did you guys both go to that?
For Sea Shepherd, you mean?
Yeah, I went. Sorry.
Yeah, it was packed. Wow, it was a really good turnout, and I think that's what probably made it. It was a fundraising event, so I think that's what made it a success for sure. I only stayed for the first 2 hours, but you probably stayed longer, right?
Adrian was there as well.
Oh, yeah. What did you think, Adrian?
Yeah, it was a wonderful turnout. I was amazed at how many people came out for the Night for the Oceans there and how many people bid
huge
on the silent
turnout.
Auctions and everything else. I think it was a really good fundraiser for them.
Yeah, for the part I went to, it was going at a really good pace, and, you know, Sea Shepherd crew were there, and speakers, Tara Millen, who we had on the show earlier, was there. She gave a wonderful, inspiring speech about her time in Taiji that she had just spent, so Yeah, I thought it went really, really well, to be very honest. And cool. Antoine did a really great job of organizing it.
Wonderfully.
That's awesome. Okay, do you guys have anything else that you wanted to discuss before we move on to the news?
It's Fur Free Friday. Did you mention that?
I briefly mentioned it, but yeah.
But I'll be talking more about that in the events. And very fittingly, we have interview about fur coming up later on the show.
Great. Did you plan that?
No, but it works so wonderfully that it's on that day.
It is Fur Free Friday, though, and it's Buy Nothing Day.
So for today, well, it's also Black Friday, where people in the States are going nuts trying to buy everything.
Buy. Oh, that's why Buy Nothing Day is today. Duh. Yeah. I guess we don't have that here.
Well, I have two pieces of news this week, and it's all about American Thanksgiving, which just happened yesterday. And my first news comes from the New York Times. For the past 3 weeks leading up to Thanksgiving, the New York Times has been collecting and featuring holiday vegetarian and vegan recipes from an all-star team of chefs and food writers. The haul has been mouth-watering, among other things, crisp, low-fat zucchini cakes, avocado and grapefruit salad, honey-roasted acorn squash, chestnut and apple casserole, and a surprisingly easy chocolate pumpkin bread pudding made with coconut milk instead of dairy products. To non-vegetarians, Thanksgiving without turkey may sound like a heresy, but shifting your focus from the bird to the rest of the meal can have a surprising effect on both your eating habits and the creativity of your cooking. To read the rest of this article and to see the recipes featured in this column and all the dishes from the Vegetarian Thanksgiving series, go to newyorktimes.com/vegetarianthanksgiving. My next piece of news is not really news, but a funny Thanksgiving piece from comedian Sarah Silverman that was featured this week on the comedy website funnyordie.com. And before we play this, I just want to give a warning that there are a couple of swear words in this piece. So if you're sensitive to that, please cover your ears.
I grew up in New Hampshire, and we lived right next door to the farm, you know, where everybody got their meat and their vegetables and everything. So when I was six, my dad brought me over there to pick out our Thanksgiving turkey, and the farmer, Vic, told me to look at all the turkeys carefully and choose the one I like. I looked around and I'm like checking them all out, and they're so cute. You know, they're like pecking at a grain, but it's like mixed in with their shit. Like, they shit where they eat. I found a cute one. I found the cutest one, and he was like waddling, and he had personality, and he kind of had a quirk, almost like an adorable tick. I pointed to him and I said, "That one, I want that one." And before my pointing finger even dropped back down to my side, Mr. Villano had grabbed the bird I chose and chopped his head off. Just like that. Blood spraying out of his neck hole. The wings still flapping, you know, making some futile attempt to unkill itself or something. I had sentenced this turkey to death at 6 years old. It was horrifying. You know, I don't think it was the turkey's top five favorite moments either. So my dad insists that he has no recollection of this.
Sarah, as I recall, I took you to Vic Villano's farm because they were going to slaughter a cow. You may want to know why I did it. I have no fucking idea why I did it. It was a beautiful fall day near Thanksgiving. The leaves were mostly all had fallen by now. And you watched as they dragged the cow to be slaughtered. You watched the cow be slaughtered. Inside the cow was a fetus, which they gave to the biology class in Nashua, and you never ate meat again. It just made sense I should do it at the time, and after I did it, didn't make any sense. And that's pretty much the story of the Thanksgiving cow, as I really don't totally remember.
I realized the true meaning of Thanksgiving, that the turkey we kill is a symbol of the Native Americans we killed. We're so grateful for their farming techniques that they taught us as we learned to harvest our own food on the land we took. We are giving thanks for being American. God bless America and its greedy, self-righteous heritage. Happy Thanksgiving, dummies!
That was very interesting. I read Sarah Silverman's autobiography and was very surprised to learn that she was a vegetarian.
I know. I just found out this week after watching that video. I'm like, who makes a video like that for Thanksgiving? But, you know, it's good. It's
Sarah
out there.
Silverman.
And it's great that message is out there for all the mainstream comedy.
Please don't take
fans.
Your six-year-old to, do take your six-year-old to choose the Thanksgiving turkey, and they will become a vegetarian very quickly.
Exactly. Well, it's kind of like Whitney Hillman, right? We had her on a couple weeks ago, and she had this food class where they have to kill the animals, and then she became a vegetarian.
So sometimes it works out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And now we have an interview with Lindsay O'Donnell and Julie Sabow from The Wake Project, an initiative set out to educate the public about sharks, rays, and tunas who cannot speak for themselves. Lindsay and Julie are going to tell us more about their newly released teacher's kit for grade 10 science students entitled Sharks and Our Oceans. Thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio.
Welcome.
Hi.
Are you both there?
I'm here. Lindsay.
Okay. Julie?
Okay. I think we accidentally dropped her call, so we'll give her another call.
I understand that the two of you penned this kit yourselves. Is that right?
Right. I did the first draft, kind of the skeleton, and then Julie went over it from a scientist perspective and kind of beefed it up. And then Martin, our third co-founder, put it together, and he's a graphic designer, so he made it look really great.
Cool. Can you tell listeners more about what you're trying to accomplish and what teachers and students will find inside your education kit?
Sure. We wanted students to know more.
Oh. Hello?
We accidentally dropped her call, but I think we have the other person on the line. Is that correct?
Julie, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, sorry. We were just asking Lindsay if you can tell us more about what you're trying to accomplish and what teachers and students will find inside your education kit.
Oh, sure, yeah. The main thing we're trying to accomplish is we want people to fall in love with the oceans, and we want people to fall in love with these large predators like sharks and tuna, because they are key in keeping our oceans healthy through the ecosystem, through the food chains that they keep healthy. The ocean is responsible for 50% of the oxygen we breathe, so we really all should care about it. So our main objective is that people fall in love with these creatures and with the ocean through our educational materials, which are designed to be not only informative, but really fun and colorful.
Okay, cool. What made you decide this was a good form of outreach?
Well, I mean, we have a few forms of outreach, but we talked to a few teachers, and they kind of told us that there's first not very many resources like this for grade 10 science, and also we thought that kids are in schools anyway having to learn, so as long as they're there, why not put a conservation spin on the things that teachers have to teach anyway?
Interesting. So I was wondering why you chose grade 10 specifically. Was it because the teachers were coming forward and saying this?
That's partially why, but also the grade science curriculum lends itself very well to this kind of material because, for example, teachers have to teach about how ecosystems work anyway. They have to teach about bioaccumulation, and they have to teach about certain social issues. So our materials just fit in really well with those mandates.
Okay. I think, do we have Lindsay back on the line again? Lindsay, are you there?
I'm back.
All right. Yay. Okay. Are there plans to extend your outreach further into the future to other grades and age groups?
Yeah, definitely. The ultimate goal is that we want our website to be kind of a destination for a teacher or student of any age group or subject to be able to go to our site and find materials about sharks and oceans that can be applicable to any subject or any class.
Okay, and currently is the kit applicable to all grade 10 science classes in Canada, or is it just here in BC?
Right now, it specifically covers topics that are mentioned in the Integrated Resource Plan for BC. However, the kit isn't specific to BC in terms of the location or the content. So current unsustainable fishing technology and dwindling fish populations is an international issue. So, I mean, it can be used within BC, across Canada, or internationally.
And why do you think it's so important that high school students learn about the roles that sharks, tunas, and rays play within this ecosystem and the way that humans exploit them as part of their curriculum?
Well, basically, we all depend on the ocean, but we're very, very disconnected from it. Most of us are at any rate. And we don't get to see how our food comes to us. And I think, and we think at Wake, that it's very important for people to make informed decisions when they choose to eat seafood or they choose to eat certain kinds of seafood. So we're trying to take some of these things that are normally hidden from people and show them, hey, this is what trawling is, this is what bycatch is, this is the other things that get caught along with your tuna. Even if it's dolphin-friendly, that tuna in the can has probably killed sea turtles and sharks and juvenile fish, and we're not told this. None of this is on the label, so we felt it really, really important that people are informed of these things so that they can make informed choices with their dollars. But also just that people fall in love with the ocean, because you're only really ever going to care about it if you really love it and you understand it at least to a certain degree. So our interactions are always meant to be really, really positive and fun for people.
What kind of an effect do you think the Sharks in Our Oceans kit will have on students and teachers?
I think that it will make them think. I think that this is information that most people just wouldn't normally have. And I hope that it'll make them think, and I hope that it'll make them want to learn more and investigate on their own. And ultimately, we hope that certain day-to-day choices in terms of what you choose to buy or eat, we hope that some people will actually choose to change some of their daily routines according to this information that we give them.
Have you had a good response yet from teachers?
We have. Teachers that have looked at it, and in fact, educators in general that have looked at it, really like how comprehensive it is, how much information there is, and how much variety of stuff there is to choose from to use, but also how colorful it is, and how it's quite easy to interact with it, and the more you interact with the kit, the more you want to interact. So they feel that that's quite valuable for their classroom.
And what process does a teacher have to go through generally within their district to be able to teach this in their classroom, or are they sort of free to make that decision for themselves?
As far as we're aware, they are free to make that decision for themselves. There are certain mandates the teachers have to cover within the curriculum of the course that they're teaching, but as far as I'm aware, as long as they're covering those mandates, they can choose what resources to use to cover those, including external resources like ours.
Well, that's good. If a student wants to have it brought into their classroom, what can he or she do?
Well, there's several things. First, talk to your teacher and send them to our website and let them have a look at what's included in the kit, and perhaps the teacher will think it's applicable for the class. But also the student themselves can incorporate some of the things from the kit and some of the information from our website into presentations or school projects. So the students themselves can perhaps choose to even bring the PowerPoint presentation and talk about it within a classroom setting if their teacher deems it's okay to do so.
And do you guys ever teach in classrooms?
We have a little bit, and we might do more of that in the future, but at this point we're focusing on teachers' kits because these kits can go out without us. There's not that many of us. We can only be in one place at once, so we figured that we would just cover a lot more schools this way if the teachers can take the resources and use them as they will.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think it probably also opens more of a dialogue within the classroom as well if it's with a teacher that they're used to.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
And if a teacher is interested in your kit, what should they do?
They should go to our website at www.wakeproject.net, and on our homepage there is a white bar on the right hand of the homepage, and within that white bar they can click on a link that will take them to the download page. Very easy. It should take about 2 minutes before you have the kit in your hands.
Okay, and do you want to explain your sharing rules that are listed on your website to our listeners?
Oh, sure. And this is kind of important for us. Our kit is free for anyone to download, but we do ask that if you have a kit, either in hard copy or as a PDF, that you don't pass that on to other people directly if they're interested, but that you send them to our website so they can download their own free copy. And the reason that we do this is because as an official society, we have to produce a report at the end of the year showing how we're interacting with the public and how many people are using our materials. So if people directly download from our website, we can tell where the kit is going, how many times it's being used, and we can also stay in touch with the people that are downloading these materials, which are important to us.
And how does that help you at the end of the year exactly?
Well, we just produce a report, as any society would, any official society in British Columbia, showing, well, you know, how many people have you interacted with, how are your resources being used, where are they being used, that kind of thing. So all that information would go into our report back to BC, so that board can see how effective our society is being.
Okay. And what about those who are no longer in high school but want more information or are interested in helping with your cause? Do you have any resources or contacts available for them?
Yes, there is a contact us link on our website, and Lindsay's email address is listed there. But if anyone would like to interact with us in any way, if you have queries or qualms or questions or concerns, we'd love to hear from you. Also, if you're interested in volunteering, we do have several events throughout the year that we can definitely use volunteers for. And our website is meant to be a teaching tool, a teaching resource. So people from anywhere in the world, of any age, high school or not, can go to our website and definitely learn new things about how their seafood comes to their table.
Yeah, I was looking at your website and some of the volunteering that you guys have done, and that you dress up as sharks and tunas and rays, and that looks like a lot of fun. So, yeah.
We do sometimes, yep.
Okay, so if people are interested and would like more information or to download your own Sharks and Oceans Learning Kit, please visit the Wake Project online at www.wakeproject.net. Thank you, Lindsay and Julie, for being on the show with us today.
Thank you.
And now over to Allison.
Against the CBC Barbarians, the longest-running classical music radio show in Canada, West Coast Classics. Rare and unusual classical music from all over the world, from 2,000 years ago to the present, all presented in its social and historical context. West Coast Classics, every Wednesday morning from 9 till noon on Co-op Radio.
We're back on the air. This is the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, and we have this week's events. Today, Friday, November the 26th, as I said before, is World Free Friday, and this day will be recognized here in Vancouver via several different events. The first is a demonstration march that is apparently happening right now in Vancouver. It started at the Vancouver Art Gallery within the last half hour, and if you want to try to catch up with the group, they are marching, and the march is supposed to go for about 2 hours throughout downtown. This march is organized by Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals. Later today, the Vancouver Animal Defense League is organizing two more demos, the first one taking place at 2 o'clock p.m. at the store Max Mara at 2756 Granville Street, and the third demonstration of the day will be at 6 p.m. and will be a home demo. For those interested in participating, they should meet at at Commercial Drive and First Avenue at 6 o'clock p.m. For more information on these two last demonstrations, please email Vancouver Animal Defense League at live.ca. And Sunday, November the 28th at 10 p.m. Pacific and Standard Time, and also rerunning on Saturday, December the 4th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The CBC Television News Network, for all of our Canadian listeners, is again presenting a showing of the documentary Food Incorporated. Several months ago, they showed this film for the first time on the CBC, which is just a great thing because it's an Oscar-nominated film, and not only that, it is really really good. So in this Oscar-nominated film, Food Incorporated, producer-director Robert Kenner and investigative authors Eric Schlosser and Michael Pollan lift the veil on the U.S. food industry, an industry that has often put profit ahead of consumer health, the livelihoods of American farmers, the safety of workers, and our own environment. The film has a really prominent section on the animal agricultural industry and depicts a vivid picture of how the animals are treated before they get to your plate. They reveal how a handful of corporations control our nation's food supply, and though the companies try to maintain the myth that our food still comes from farms with red barns and white picket fences, our food is actually raised on massive factory farms. Can you imagine that? I think we know that here on Animal Voices, and processed mega industrial plants. The animals grow fatter faster and designed to fit the machines that slaughter them. Tomatoes are bred to be shipped without bruising and stay edible for months. The system's highly productive, and Americans are spending less on food than ever before, but at what cost? It's not just Americans, of course, it's Canadians too. So watch the film to find out. And if you can't watch this film on the days that it's being shown, it is going to be on the internet. So I do recommend that you get on there. So just go to cbc.ca/documentaries/passionateeyeshowcase/2010/Food Inc. And if you're not listening to this on the podcast and you can't rewind it, just go to cbc.ca and search for Food Incorporated. I highly recommend that you do watch this film already if you haven't. And if you have, please tell a friend about it. It's a really amazing film. And I know, Joanne, you were just talking to us about someone who had seen this film and it encouraged them to go further to watch a film that you screened last weekend. And now they're thinking about going vegan. So there you go. I think the power of video and moving images really is a different way to just convey a message across that perhaps a radio show might not do, or perhaps books might not do, reading articles and that. It's just another way to get the message out there, and I think video really has the power to do that really well. And lastly, on Tuesday, November the 30th at 6:30 p.m., the Earth Save Canada Readers Group is hosting a dinner at the vegan restaurant Dharma Kitchen at 3667 West Broadway in Vancouver. Please join the Earth Save Readers Group for dinner at the vegan restaurant Dharma Kitchen, where we will be discussing our November and December book over some good conversation and yummy food. The book for this month and next is called An American Trilogy, Death, Slavery, and Dominion on the Banks of the Cape River Fear. It's totally animal rights related. It's by Stephen M. Wise. If you don't have to have read the book to join in the dinner gathering, eat some good food and socialize, all are welcome to attend. But please RSVP so that we know how many seats to reserve. I say we because I'll be there myself. I'm part of the readers group. And they are really good meetings to go to if you just want to eat some food and have some good conversation. So you can RSVP by searching for Earth Save Canada Readers Group on Facebook, or by going to meetup.com and searching for Vancouver Meatless Meetups there. So I will say now that if you have an animal or vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced in the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you for that, Allison. Just a reminder that you're listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC. In studio with us today, as mentioned at the top of the show, is Adrian Nelson, Director of Communications with Fur Bearer Defenders, who earlier this week debuted their new ad campaign to enlighten consumers about the use of dog and cat fur in many fashions they might least expect. The ads can be found on buses and SkyTrains, and their release comes just in time for the busy holiday shopping season, and as consumers are feeling the chills of winter and looking to buy new jackets, boots, and accessories to stay warm. Again, welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Adrian.
Thanks so much for having me, and happy for Free Friday.
Thank you.
Sorry it's so hot in here, Adrian.
We don't need fur at all.
Not in here.
Strangely, in the dead of winter, it's quite warm in this
Maybe somebody broke
today.
It on purpose. Can you tell me more about the use of cat and dog fur in fashion?
Well, there was an undercover operation that was done a number of years ago by the HSUS, which is the Humane Society in the United States, and they did an operation in China, Thailand, and the Philippines, and what they found was that over 1 million dogs and cats are being, in some ways, brutally slaughtered solely for their fur. This fur has been being used in cheap garments, such as what we see is the fur and trim on hoods and boots and purses, even small little cat toys and things like that.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about how they're usually killed for their fur?
It is a little gruesome. A lot of them are caged into very small cages where they can't even stand. They're thrown off the top of trucks while they're transported. These cages are stacked sometimes 20, 30 high. Their legs usually end up getting broken. And a lot of times they are skinned alive. So a small wire goes around their neck. They're usually tied to a fence or something along that line so they can't reach around and bite. And then they are gutted, and the skin is peeled off while they're still living.
That's not very nice.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
I'll say it. It's disgusting.
Yeah. It is. But besides how they're slaughtered, I think a lot of Canadians would be deeply upset to know that the fur that they could be wearing could be dog and cat. You know, we all have so many in our family. They are really a part of our family. And to have them as a coat, I think, would really alarm a lot of people.
And, you know, when I learned about how common that is to have real fur when it's said to be not real fur in stores, it just turns me off from even wanting, not that I really like fur anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to buy things maybe with a fur trim. It's not like I seek it. But it just turns me off from even buying anything that's fake fur because
yeah.
you don't know. To me, I'm thinking, oh, that's really dog or cat fur.
That's what
know?
I think, too. And I
yeah.
also think, do I really want to portray to people that as a vegan I want to wear even
that
fake
too.
Fur?
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it's
too.
Very true. Even if it's faux fur, you are perpetuating that myth that fur is fashionable and something
yeah.
that we should be having.
And why is it that people don't know that they're wearing dog or cat fur?
This is a real sad part about it is here in Canada, fur actually falls through a loophole in the Labeling and Textile Act. So even concerned consumers will go and they'll pick up a garment, they'll look at the coat and they'll read the label and it'll say, you know, cotton and polyester, and they assume that that's everything in the coat and will make the assumption that the fur trim then therefore must be faux fur. Being that fur and fur garments do not need to be labeled here in Canada, that could be fox fur, it could be rabbit fur, it could be dog or cat fur. You just have no way of knowing.
Interesting.
Okay. And what sorts of garments, again, are they usually on?
They can be found pretty much in anything that's containing fur. You know, some of the stuff that we see a lot of right now are the trim on fur hoods. You see a lot of these people with big puffy jackets and a small bit of fur trim,
mm-hmm.
Fur trim around boots, things like that. And people don't associate that trim with a living animal.
Mm-hmm.
We associate fur coats as these big, long mink stoles and stuff like that. We don't realize that that small bit of trim used to be a living creature.
Yeah, I know. It's like you see people with $30 jackets, and they would have real fur trim on them because it's, what, is it really cheap to get fur now?
It is. It's actually cheaper to make real fur than it is for faux fur. And that's a big misconception. A lot of people think, well, it's so cheap, it can't be real
right.
fur. But when you're using dogs and cats, some of which are just scooped right off of the street and brutally slaughtered, it's a lot cheaper than processing fake fur.
It costs nothing.
Very little.
And what are some of the labels that you might find these under?
It's hard to say. It really is no way of knowing which labels are carrying dog and cat fur and which aren't. There is a list on the Humane Society's website that does have some of the ones that they have found it on. I believe Mark New York and a few of those places. But it really can be anywhere here in Canada because there is no labeling.
But what does the label usually say that might mean that it's...
Well, some things that you could look for, obviously look for labels that don't have any mention of the fur at all. We have found that things that have been labeled faux fur have been real fur. And there's things, made up names, such as the Asian wolf, which doesn't exist. There's
the
odd...
Dog.
Yeah, exactly. Look for names of animals that don't exist. And it's probably...
Yeah. It was in China, people.
And why do you think this message is an important one to bring to the public, and why now?
I think the vast majority of Canadians would be very upset to learn that dogs and cats are being imported here into Canada. And I think especially right now when people are shopping for winter coats, they're shopping for holiday gifts, it's important for them to know that this is out there and that this exists.
And do you have a system set up to measure the impact of your campaign on the Christmas market?
We're asking anybody that does see the ads and wants to learn more to go to our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/furfree, which is fitting for Fur Free Friday. And from there, we're going to be able to gauge how many people are seeing the ads and coming in that wouldn't normally. And we're already seeing a huge jump in our numbers and people that are generally concerned about this.
Adrian, what do the ads look like?
We've got two ads that are running right now. One is on the back of buses, so they're pretty hard to miss. So the whole back of the bus has a large dog on it, and we're using the quote on there, "I am not a coat." The second one is in the interior cards, like up top on the buses and the sky trains, and it kind of looks like a fashion ad with a woman wearing these furry collared coats, and on top of it is a big warning label that says, "Caution, this coat may contain dog or cat fur."
That's great.
That's striking. Yeah. It'll make people think, I think.
Do you have estimates on the amount of money spent on cat and dog fur each year, or is that even possible with the veil of secrecy surrounding the industry?
It's absolutely impossible to know. Without knowing how much fur is coming into Canada and in what ways it's coming in, our government wants to do very little to stop this trade, and in fact has come out and said they will not ban the trade on this. So it's really hard to know exactly how much is coming in.
And why is it that they won't ban the trade?
Believe it or not, they won't ban the trade on products coming in because it could jeopardize our seal products leaving Canada, which is another horrible, horrible trade.
All the more reason to.
Well, exactly. All the more reason to ban dog and cat.
Yeah. If you don't agree with the seal trade, which apparently most Canadians don't support fur or faux fur even.
And, you know, I mean, that's the question on my mind. Aren't there laws? Cats and dogs, that must be illegal, right?
It isn't here in Canada, unfortunately. The sad part about it is the United States has banned this. All of Australia has banned this, and the entire European Union has banned cat and dog fur. Mm. So we're one of the last few markets for this fur to be coming into. So without the government stepping up, trying to monitor this, and trying to put things in place to protect our consumers, we're left wide open for this fur.
Is the use of cats and dogs for fur a common practice in China, where I understand most of the pelts are coming from, or is it more that they're producing the dogs and cats for the North American consumers?
It's hard to say if it's normal practice. I have seen photos and videos of these Chinese fur markets, and they have giant stores basically that just sell fur and fur pelts and stuff like that. And you can walk through and see the hides of German shepherds and cats and stuff hanging in these booths.
So they are aware of it.
Almost definitely. And you can buy coats online and at these shops that are labeled as dog fur or domestic cat fur. There's no secrecy there about what it is.
I'm curious, do you think that the dog and cat fur industry in Asia is a byproduct of their meat industry, just like leather is a byproduct of our meat industry here?
It's true that they do use dog sometimes in foods. What we've heard is that it is two different industries. The way that dogs are slaughtered for food, the fur is literally just kind of ripped off and discarded. It's not taken off in a way where it can be used as a pelt. So it is actually two different industries. So this over a million animals is solely for fur.
Yeah, and I want to say, even as a Chinese person, not very many Chinese people eat dog. It's like a very, very, very small niche of people. So I don't think they would have enough pelts to produce the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I know this is an issue that Fur Bearer Defenders has been working on for a while now, so I'm curious as to what kind of reactions you get from people when you're out tabling at events.
It's surprising how many people still don't know that this is going on. Obviously those, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners who are very animal conscious and very humane with the way that they shop and the way that they eat, have probably heard something about this, but a lot of the general public hasn't heard that cats and dogs are being used for their fur. So that was one of the parts of this campaign, was to try to get it out there as big as we could, and try to get as many people seeing this problem.
And is that your reason for the shift to bus ads?
Yes, it was something new for us. We've done some newspaper stuff before and magazine, obviously some radio, but we wanted to get it out larger, and what's larger than the back of a giant bus running around town.
And it's environmentally friendly.
It is, yes. They are green buses.
The ads have only been unveiled earlier this week, but what has the reaction been like so far?
So far, it's been really good. We're starting to see a lot of people coming into Facebook that had no idea. They're wanting to learn more about this subject. So it's still very early to see, but we're hoping that there will be a big turnout because of it.
How long does the campaign run for?
The campaign will run for 2 months, so right over the Christmas shopping season.
And the winter season where people are more thinking about buying like
and even Boxing Day.
I'm seeing a lot of them just in the past couple of weeks, people coming out with their fur collars.
Yeah, it's a bigger and bigger trend lately, and I think it's just because people don't associate that with fur.
Yeah. Well, the thing is you buy a winter coat, and there might be a 50% chance that it just happens to have a fur collar on it. You know, it's not like people are necessarily looking for that, but they go, oh, it's got a fur collar. That's fine. You know, it's warm. I'll buy it.
Yeah.
Especially in the weather we've been having lately, right?
So is it maybe an issue that needs to be taken more to designers, do you think?
Indeed, I would hope that a lot of designers would start thinking about their line and how ethical it is, whether it's even faux fur, just promoting that myth that fur is in fashion, I think is really wrong. The fur industry has taken a hit in the last few years, especially with people coming out and showing how bad fur can be. And they're really trying to get back into that market, and they're doing it by sneaking it in these small little ways.
Yeah, do you think that's why they've sort of moved to the cheaper cat and dog fur?
It's quite possible. They're trying to figure out any which way that they can get fur back into the mainstream, and they're doing that in very, very small amounts that hopefully the average consumer won't notice. But we're hoping to change their mind on that.
Now, I've seen in pet shops where they sell these dog jackets with fur collars and have talked to like store owners, and they don't even know it's real because some shipments of the exact same jacket will be fake and some will be real, and none of them are labeled.
Yeah, it's so true. Again, with the labeling laws, nobody can be sure. The other really sick thing that a lot of people find is the little toy mice that you buy to play with your cat and stuff. They're made out of real fur. You know,
like
most people,
from a cat?
Well,
again, there's no way of knowing. So
I mean, you can buy those dried up pig's ears for your dog.
That's
and
true.
Have you ever seen a big bin of those? It's absolutely repulsive.
And Adrian, do you know if that's just like scrap fur? Because whenever I've asked people, you know, like, why are you buying this for your cats and dogs? They're like, oh, that's just, you know, from the slaughterhouse, just leftover scrap from the slaughterhouse or something.
It's funny when people say scrap fur because it's as if it is some fur that the animal just discarded. This is an animal that actually died, and this was the extra little bit that they couldn't use in a larger part. It still makes up the death of the animal, whether it's a centimeter or a whole coat.
And, yeah, definitely helps to support the industry.
Indeed.
It's helping them make
that's
a little
really
bit more money.
That's really looking at the bigger picture. And I don't know if a person who just goes and buys a little fake mouse for their cat is thinking
about
that big picture.
I feel really bad right now because I wasn't thinking about it. And my cat has those at home.
Yeah, and most
see,
people
there
don't.
You go. Yeah. I bet you people just don't think about that.
I've kind of thought about it, but was like, no way that would.
And people buying bones for their dogs, too.
Yeah.
That's made out of real, you know, rawhide or whatever it is, you know, it's the same thing.
On last week's show, Allison mentioned that a few years ago, the Vancouver Humane Society was declined to run ads of a similar nature as yours and another group have been approved for recently. What has the journey been like from conception to fruition with this campaign?
It definitely was a concern of ours that the ad would be rejected. You know, some things that are controversial, often ad companies don't want to run. More importantly to us was getting an ad that people would associate with and would recognize and be willing to read. So many times we're shown graphic images of dogs being slaughtered or, you know, what's happening in the slaughterhouses and chickens in battery cages. And we really shy away from that. You know, a lot of people turn their eye from that. They don't want to see the message. They don't want to see the graphics. So we hope by this, with dogs that are quite friendly looking, with a woman that's just in a general coat, that people can associate and say, hey, that looks like my dog. Hey, that looks like the coat that my sister wears. And they can associate with that ad and learn more about it rather than shying away from it.
Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what breeds of dogs are used in the fur industry.
We don't know.
I have heard Golden Retriever, or maybe that's
we've
meat.
Heard Golden Retrievers, we've heard German Shepherd. Obviously, the larger the dog, the more fur they're going to get out of it. Some of the pictures and the videos that have come back from the undercover operation actually show dogs with collars still on them. So some of these are either purebreds of, you know, family pets or just mutts that have come off the street. So it's just whatever they can get their hands on.
So your dog
could be
that's
cult.
All you need to know is mm-hmm. it could be your dog. That's what I always say if I need to make a comparison to someone, like, what if that was your dog, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
Right? Because people, it doesn't matter what kind of animal it is to me, but for most people, they can relate to that.
Yeah,
you know?
What they know.
And this actually, we're talking about dogs here. We're not talking about pigs and cows. When I usually say, what if that was your dog? You know, these are dogs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just like your dog.
Why do you think TransLink and its ad managing agency are more open to these types of campaigns and messages on transit?
I think that there's been a really good push with all of the animal groups here in town to get the message out that animals are important to us, whether it's from a dietary point of view, whether it's from an environmental point of view, whether it's from a humane point of view, more and more realizing how important animals are to us. And I think we're seeing that in business and in advertising and people willing to take the risk on something that may have been a little more controversial a few years ago.
Do you think they're willing to take the risk more because it's sort of reflecting changing attitudes within the general public?
I would hope so. I would really hope that there is a change in attitude from people about how we're using animals and how we're taking over on our own environment.
And what is it that Fur Bearer Defenders is hoping to gain from this campaign?
Obviously, we're hoping to get a ban on dog and cat fur here in Canada. If people go to our website, furbearerdefenders.com, they can send an email to their member of parliament asking them to support a ban on dog and cat fur. There is some bills in the works right now that would ultimately ban dog and cat fur. And that would be what this campaign is supporting. We also have a postcard campaign that's going on right now, and people can get in contact with us through our website to get postcards that can be sent off to Parliament to support this campaign.
Speaking of the postcard campaign, how effective have you found that to be so far?
Very, very effective. We've printed over 42,000 cards that have gone out and are going to the Parliament. They are supporting Bill C-439, which is a bill that would ultimately put dog and cat fur on the Hazardous Products Act, which would ultimately ban dog and cat fur here in Canada.
I'm just curious about who instigated this bill. Has it been an animal welfare or rights group or Parliament itself?
This is a private member's bill that came through from a member of Parliament out of Manitoba named Anita Neville, and she's tabled this. It's gone through its first reading, and we're waiting now for its second reading. So until it comes up for its second reading, we're sending as many postcards with support to Anita, and hopefully she will be bringing that to Parliament and letting everybody know how many Canadians are really opposed to this act.
Do you know how long a process like this takes to be completed?
It's hard to tell. With government, you just never know. Everything's a long, drawn-out process.
That's what I figured.
Yeah.
Is there a date yet for the second reading?
No, there
reading?
Isn't. The way a private member's bill works is it's brought forward as a first reading, and then it's a lottery system as to when the second reading comes up. So when her name's drawn, then she'll be able to put the bill forward for second reading.
That doesn't particularly sound promising.
It never is, but the important thing is it is on the books now, and it is available for other MPs to bring forward, and we're urging other MPs, and we really want everybody to urge their MP to bring forward this bill and to support it and to have them push it through as well.
And what kind of a difference would that make?
We could have it go through through Parliament a lot faster if more and more MPs are willing to get on board.
Okay. Maybe we should all become MPs.
That's a good idea.
Yes.
And are you looking to start a dialogue about this issue? And if so, where can people find more information and discuss their concerns?
Most definitely. I think the best way of people getting informed is to discuss things and hear other people's ideas and opinions. So definitely the best place to go is our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/furfree. And we have a dialogue going on there that people are willing to get involved with.
And what's the best way for our listeners to get involved specifically? Through the website?
Through the website. Again, there's the postcard campaign and emailing your MP. And if they just go to furbearerdefenders.com, and they can get more information on the postcard campaign, the dog and cat fur, as well as our many other campaigns.
Okay. Is there an online component to the campaign or leafletting activities that need help with?
We're asking everybody to contact their MP, whether it's through the postcards or through our website. There is an online form that can be filled out, and it emails directly to your MP. It's very easy. It takes about 30 seconds. And you can email your MP and ask for them to give you a response back. You know, ask them what it is that they want to do about this.
And what their thoughts are, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with the leafletting? Are you doing that?
Again, we're doing the postcards.
Okay, postcards.
If anybody wants them to contact us.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Do you guys have any more questions for Adrian?
No, I just want to say it was really nice to meet you, Adrian, and see you in person. It seems like you're running a great campaign there.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You and the other employees at Forbearers. Good job.
Thank you again for being here, and you've really helped to shed some light on this inhumane practice, and I'm sure most people who are supporting it don't realize that they are. We wish you success with the campaign, and that shoppers will keep this issue in mind this holiday season, and that concerned citizens will take the initiative to go to your website and find you on Facebook for further information on how to get the Canadian government to know their thoughts on this issue. Allison?
You've been listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. So next week on the show, it's getting to be the holiday season, and I thought we would have some holiday-themed shows. So we'll be having a vegan guinea pig blogger. She's the blogger of a blog called Vegan Guinea Pig, just so you know.
She's not a vegan guinea pig?
Well, I think she is.
I want a guinea pig on the show.
Yeah, and anyways, blogger and author Alicia Simpson to talk to us about her newly published book called Quick and Easy Vegan Celebrations, which offers a broad range of vegan recipes that you can make for all kinds of celebrations and holidays throughout the year, including Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa. And she will be talking to us about cooking vegan for this winter's holiday season. I'm looking forward to that. Just received the book yesterday, actually, so I'm going to be doing a review about it and trying.
So you're going to be busy cooking until next
Friday. Hopefully, yeah. I've got a lot of baking to do, though, too. I don't know how I'm going to fit this all in. Anyways, we hear the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web, and you can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, which I noticed yesterday I think has 355 members now. It's growing very small. I make a lot of effort to cross-post, and out of all my efforts that take me, you know, all day and all night to do, I may get two extra members, so we really appeal to our listeners out there. If you're listening to this live on the air right now or on podcast later on, please do join our Facebook page. So search Animal Voices Vancouver and do even suggest it to your friends. I'd really like to see a surge there where
maybe we can get 500 by the end of the year.
That's okay. Why don't you take that on as your project? I really have worked on it this year, so need some help here. And suggest it to your friends, because I've already asked all my friends. Trust
me. You need to make new friends.
You know, every single member is important to us, however, so the two is wonderful. Yeah. We value every single one of them.
Trust me, I appreciate it when I go on there every day, and I see that there's been one new member. I appreciate it, trust me. And trust me, it makes me really, really depressed and sad when I see that we have one less member the next day. It's good stuff, people. So please join our Facebook page. And by joining our Facebook page, we do post little news and tidbits there on issues that we have coming up on the show. We also usually send out a weekly email telling you what's coming up so that you can be informed of that. We always post our link to our website on there of what the show is about and give you a link to listen to the podcast later, because I know we probably have a lot of listeners that aren't in Vancouver. You can really only hear the show on the air in the city or even in Bellingham too. But
there's an idea. Yeah. Send it to your friends all over the world that are vegan, vegetarian, thinking about it.
For
you know?
Sure. I mean, we do talk about locally related things sometimes, but a lot of the stuff we talk about is worldwide related, and it applies to you and your community and your city where you are, you know. So join our Facebook page. That was my little spiel for that. Now, we also have Twitter. Animal Voices YVR, so please join us on there. I'm not as enthusiastic about that because I'm not so much a Twitter person, but I do go on there and update it, and I know Joanne does too, and Carissa did too. So please go on there, and please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show. Either you can post them on our Facebook page, or you can email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And as I mentioned before, we do have a website, animalvoices.org, where all of our shows can be downloaded from, so please go on there. And you can also subscribe to us via iTunes, which I checked out actually earlier this week. And if you're an iTunes person who likes to subscribe to podcasts and that, so that they just conveniently come into your iTunes software application when you open it up, do that as well. If you support the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. Every little bit helps, so thank you for your support. And I'm just going to leave us here with a song called Slipping the Food Chain by the vegan band Green Beans. Please tune in again next week, and thank you for listening.
Standard American diet advice.
Champagne and so nutritious.
I love the plantain.